to Extra Features Podcast Interviews, whatever we're calling today. Today we have a fabulous guest all the way from Ireland. I hope you people can understand him, because when I watched this film, I loved it. The accents are amazing, but it's a little hardcore for me. So I hope you guys have brushed up on your Irish. His movie Split, Robbie Walsh, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to be here.
Yeah, so I want to start off. You have Hitman in your movie. You have a car in your movie. You have a guy in the back seat in your movie.
Yeah.
And you have, like, very little locations.
Yeah, it's called a no-string budget. It's a little bit lower than a shoestring budget. So you got to make do when you have to make something good, you know?
So before we even get into locations and stuff like that, let's discuss, whose car are you using the whole film? Or is it more than one car?
It's the one car. It was the lead actor who plays opposite me. It was his Jeep, so to speak. And, Dave, there's a very prominent mixed martial arts fighter. And he has a nice Jeep, so we decided to use that.
So then you have a guy in the back seat the whole time filming. Mm-hmm. Did you guys use any steady cams for that, or is this guy holding it the whole time?
I think he had a spider rig. But because of the type of film it is, it's a mockumentary. So I only had 3 days to film because of the budget I only had. So yeah, we had him in the backseat filming everything and anything, and I knew I would just get it in the budget afterwards, you know?
Hold on. You filmed a whole film in 3 days?
Yeah.
Let's start right there. So what time did you get up in the morning to start filming?
Oh, God. I think I was out of bed at maybe 5 a.m., quarter to 5 every morning.
And what time do you start shooting?
We would film from maybe 5 a.m. till 7, 8 that night.
Okay, wow. So let's go through the whole film. We can leave things out. So you get up, you guys are at 5 a.m., you hit the car at 7, and you start filming.
Yeah, well, we'd have our scenes, so we would know what scene we would need to film, or which scenes we would need to film, and then we would go until we needed break. We'd have 2 breaks a day, and then, of course, we would finish. So I knew exactly where we would need to be, and then getting between each location, we would film in the car, because the story, of course, would be the hitmen's discussion in between hits, so to speak. So as we were driving between locations, we would also be filming the kind of pick-up and interview scenes with the hitmen.
So when you go from location one to location two, is that when you eat? Is that when you have a break? Or do you even have time for lunch?
No, we would be driving to lunch to where we would need to eat. And we would film going to lunch. And then as we would have lunch, we would discuss what we were doing next. And then as we would go from lunch back to set or whatever location we were going to, we would film then also.
So I guess let's bring this right in now. You have a bar scene. I think it's Wally's Bar, you suggest. I could have the wrong name of the bar.
Okay.
It's right near the end of the film. So did you eat lunch then film in the bar, or did you have that set up ahead of time?
No, we ate lunch there. We had it set up ahead of time. So we would go and have lunch there, and then we would film in the back of the bar.
And so how'd you get that location?
Just a friend of mine owned the bar. Literally, we say that in the film. It's a friend of mine's bar.
You do say that, but I don't know. It's a movie. Who knows if it's really a friend of yours' bar?
Yeah, it was. It was a friend of mine's bar, and he allowed us to film there. Yeah.
Okay, and then you go to a scene at some point in your film that you have a scene with 2 girls and a pimp.
Yeah.
Now, is that set up ahead of time, too, then? Were they on time?
Hold on a second. So I have to plug for this. Sorry about that. I just have to get the plug from my laptop.
Yeah.
It was set up ahead of time. So there's an area in Dublin's fairly rough area called Ballymun. And we knew we had to film the one scene where our hitmen had to go and intimidate a pimp. So we would just kind of ring ahead and tell the actors to meet us at the location. And from there, we would go and meet the actors, do our scene, and then maybe, you know, feed the actors on set. And then the main crew, which was a skeleton crew, so it was myself, the lead actor, a camera sound guy, and then the assistant, who was an actor in the film also. Yeah.
So, was anybody late in 3 days? I mean, you have 3 days to shoot. That is very tight.
Yeah, so actually one day we were late because if you see the scene with the pimp, there was a fight scene. And that was with a guy called Chris Fields, who was one of Ireland's prominent MMA fighters, and he kicked our lead actor in the head and kicked him and gave him a concussion. So, yeah, that day he was pretty late because he had a concussion.
So you have a scene set up, and I'm sure since you're on a three-day shoot, you haven't practiced your action scenes.
Yeah.
So the guy just hauled off and kicked him?
It was an accident.
Of course, it was an accident. I guess since you're almost doing like guerrilla shooting, I'll call it. It pretty much feels like that at times.
Yeah, it was 100% guerrilla shooting. It was absolutely, yeah.
I mean, you have two women in a park. You have the pimp. I was trying to figure, did people notice what was going on?
Yeah, we had a bunch of kids that came over. Like, we filmed very early in the morning at that scene, for that sequence. And there was a bunch of kids playing over at a playground, and they want, of course, in Dublin, they can be a bit rambunctious. So they came over, and of course, they were like, can we get in your movie? Can you film us? And at first, you know, one of the actors had said no, was very dismissive, but when they started throwing rocks at us, we kind of had to tell them we would film them then.
You're filming your scene with the pimp, and these like four or five kids are whipping rocks at you?
Yeah, it's Dublin. That happens in Dublin from time to time.
I can't say that's ever happened to me. Okay, the footage, I don't remember being in the film. Is it not there? You just filmed them and didn't put it in?
We just pretended to film them, and we just said, oh, you're in a movie, and they were happy, and they sat and they watched then, you know?
Sorry, it's just so bizarre. Okay, yeah. And I also want to go, you have another shot of a park, and you have a jogger running by, the hitmen do their thing, I'll leave it at that. How was that just sort of, again, no problems with that, so shot? Because that was pretty quick, too.
We were shooting pretty early. I knew the location. It's where I jog most days anyway. It's a beautiful area where I live. And the girl who played the girl walking boy, was actually used to be in The Commitments. We just kind of said to her, look, as your own boy, come up to us and this will happen. Because it's constructive improv, I don't particularly overshoot, so I'll do a maximum of three takes. I'll go with whichever looks, I'd like to say natural, but because of the subject matter, I don't know if natural is the right word. But whatever is the best one, I tend to just go with the uncut take. Because it's a mockumentary, you'll get away with a lot more.
I think you also got to accept, as a viewer, I have to accept your world. You present the world you want me to see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can set it up whichever way you want. As long as you continue that the whole way through the film, I should have no issues with that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I just way think, especially when you do that street scene with the guy asking for directions. I noticed you shot that really quick.
Oh, God, yeah. That was it. Again, that was in an area of Dublin that is kind of known for it can be a bit of a rough area. And when we had shot that scene, one of the neighbours in the housing estate just seen a car pull up, shoot this guy, and he fell over. And we seen her panic and didn't know what to do. We had to tell her it was a film because she thought somebody was really getting shot, and you're kind of like, no, it's just a movie. It's an independent, low-budget movie, you know, because we didn't have the lights or the crew or the trucks. We just pulled up in a car and shot this guy on the edge of the road. But, you know, we ironed it out, and it was okay in the end, you know.
So you're saying, I want to go a couple more things on this. So you've done this shot. Was your route planned that you were going to drive down and shoot this way, or did the driver decide which way to get to each location?
Well, it's all very close-knit. I mean, it's all around North County Dublin. So we are very, like, where I live would be very close to the areas where I knew we needed to shoot, and they would be places I knew very well, or David Alexander, he's the other writer, the actor in the film, where we would know very well. So they would be very close, and we knew in between driving, we said, look, we would have 15 minutes filming between locations to shoot each sequence, whether it be a hit or a setup, and we knew we would have 15 minutes of filming, so we could have a little conversation within those 15 minutes. So we knew what we would talk about, but it wasn't scripted. It would be like very kind of improvised, but we knew what we would be talking about, you know?
I do. Okay, next, shooting in the rain, because I don't think you had planned for that, if it just sort of happened.
It's Ireland, so, I mean, if you don't like the weather in Ireland, you wait a minute and it changes. So, I like to shoot in the rain. I think it looks fantastic. It was very difficult. But like that, when you don't have enough time, you have to deal with it and film. And that was it. I mean, we were filming, and the rain in one of the scenes caused a lot of hassle. And even at one point, I think we were driving, the rain is very heavy on the car, and it really messed with the audio a lot, you know. But like that, we didn't have the budget at the time, so we had to just walk around it, and that was it, deal with it.
You have some very descriptive dialogue in your film, I would like to add. Calling a dog a real name and calling your kid, quote, a shit name?
Yeah.
Is that a personal opinion?
It's not my personal opinion. I just think it was, I think it came from one of the actors was walking along and actually heard a girl calling her dog like Kevin or something. And we had this discussion away from camera, and you know, one of the guys was like, do you know, I seen someone calling their dog Kevin. And then it's kind of bored from that. It was like, imagine calling your dog Kevin and calling your kid, like, Apple. You know, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And that's where that conversation came from. You know, names can be a little bit... I think my character says, imagine calling your kid Footsie Index or something
like
that.
He does say something like that.
It is kind of like a nod to a ridiculous name. You know, people can go with names on children.
Oh, so I agree with you.
Up, you know?
I'm 100% in agreement with you. I just thought it was a very funny line. I want to discuss a little bit about your casting.
Okay.
Especially this MMA guy. He is one big boy.
David Alexander.
Oh, yeah, my God. How tall is that guy?
Dave is 5'10", I think.
Okay, he looks much bigger in the film.
Yeah, I know he's 5'10 or 5'11, I'm not too sure. Look, I'm 5'9", so he's an inch or two taller than I am.
Remember I have the wrong guy. The guy in the bar playing pool.
Oh, John Redmond. Oh, no, John Redmond is 6'5". Yeah, he's a big boy.
Sorry, wrong guy. Sorry, that's the guy I'm talking about.
Yeah. No, John Redmond, yeah, he's a big guy. He's fighting on Bellator. He's on the Bellator fight organization now. Yeah, he's 6'4", 6'5", yeah. Big, big lad.
I don't know. With your two actor, you and yourself and the other actor, being up, like, that is one big boy. I don't know about him.
Well, he was meant to film The Thing, and I think he had a fight that week, and he broke his leg or broke his foot during the fight. So when he came down to film, his whole leg was in a cast. So the scene was originally meant to be with, like, fake pool cues and a big fight scene, you know, kind of like Mean Streets.
Yes.
And I'd imagine the kind of this handheld fun thing around a pool table, almost Benny Hill meets Mean Streets. You know, but he had a broken leg, so I was like, okay, well, we'll just choke it to death with some rope and, you know, we'll go from there, you know. It's a pretty horrible, like, death, you know, in the movie. But, yeah, it was really on the fly that we had to shoot around it, you know.
So you seem to be doing a lot of on-the-fly shooting. You keep going back to that. So when you show up to do a scene, let's just, since we're discussing the pool table scene, what advice do you give your actors, or do you say, this is what we're going to do in this scene? Because you're out living it, you're telling me all the time.
Yeah, it's a thing. I call it constructed improv. I like to think, like, I will sit down with the actors, because I was an actor before, first and foremost. So what I would do is I would say to the actor, or the actors, or whoever's in the scene, I would say, look, we need to get, the scene needs to go from A to D. And on the way to D, we need to get B, A, you know, we need to go A, B, C. So we need to get B and C. So Jordan, B and C will talk about these subjects. And then whoever is the more experienced actor will kind of guide the conversation. So we will start talking about, say, a priest in one scene, or we will go and I'll say to John, John, in the pool scene, we're going to pretend to interview you. You're going to talk about your martial arts and the titles you have won. And we'll do that twice. And then Dave will come behind you and he will do his bit where he will choke you. So be as natural as you can and talk about your experiences rather than trying to make something up. And then, because, you know, some of them would be their first time or second time doing a movie or doing a bit of acting. So rather than trying to make something up that they're going to forget about and stumble over, let them talk about something that's natural and relatable and is something they've experienced themselves. And it becomes more natural and it becomes easier for them for actors, especially new actors, to remember what they're doing. You know, so that would be kind of a big thing I would deal with them, like, you know.
Since we're discussing new actors, I want to go back to the girls in the park.
Okay.
Now, the guy, Dave, looks, the dude we've already discussed, he's about 5'10 or something. Those girls look tiny. Do you have them on different levels? Was that your plan? Because at one point it looks like you're shifting levels on the shot.
Yeah, in that scene, the two girls, Slaney Kelly and Roxanne May, Slaney Kelly's a fantastic actress who I've worked with a few times, but they were just sitting on a short wall.
Oh, okay.
That was it. So I wanted to get a kind of like, I wanted the camera to be looking up at the two hitmen, and like kind of panning at an angle up and down. But I wanted the, like, almost like they were superior walking into the scene, but very quickly the women, Slaney in particular, takes control of the scene really quickly. And if you see, the camera comes back down and it's almost like she brings the two cocky guys down to her level and just evens it out, because she completely steals the scene on that one. Like,
yeah, know. I was just kind of confused. I'm like, are they on it? It looked like maybe we're on a sandbank or something, like a, I don't know, a sand pile or something. It was just the way it was shot. I'm like, I'm going to have to ask you, because you definitely change heights on people constantly.
Yeah.
On that scene. So I didn't know if that was planned or just happened. That's what I was asking.
Yeah. No, it becomes a kind of some do be planned. A lot just happens kind of naturally. I mean, that was done like a coffee. Kind of really, kind of rolling with what we're throwing at them. But like that, with that scene in particular, yeah, we did want the two girls talking up to the guys, but then literally bringing us down to the level of, like, listen, you, get down here, we're all the same, and we'll take you down a peg or two, which is what the character, one of the blonde girl, Slaney, does. In a very descriptive way.
So you have casting for this film. I mean, you're doing a 3-day shoot. I guess, do you tell them it's only 3 days ahead of time? You're saying, look, you have to be here at 9, you have to be here. I don't have another day to shoot this. I have to have you on Tuesday or whatever. How does that all work out?
So we had to tell the actors in advance. We only had three days to film it because that's all I had. That's all the money I had. And that's the only time some of them, our DOP with his camera and our sound guy with his sound equipment, that's the only time they could allocate to us. I would plan weeks in advance of when I would need each actor to do what. Now, leading up to this, we had a very world-famous, well-known Irish mixed martial arts star was supposed to be in the picture for us because all the guys in the film are all MMA fighters. But 2 days before we filmed, he called us and said he was in Portugal and couldn't do the picture, so we had to replace him with an MMA fighter called Cathal Pendred. We would give the actors as much notice as we could, but I would tell them, look, we only have like 2 hours or 3 hours to film your scene. You're only doing one scene. It's almost like a cameo. But the biggest problem we found was not the actors, was actually when we were torn up the film at locations. So when we were doing the fight scene that ended up out in the back garden was meant to be inside in an apartment. And when we turned up to the apartment to film, the owner just opened the door with like a chain lock and peeked out and said, I've decided not to let you film here today. Goodbye. And closed the door in their faces. So we had to go and find a friend of ours back garden who let us film there on the day. And we constructed this whole bloody fight scene around the back garden that was meant to happen indoors. And we got one of the more memorable scenes because we got the whole James Bond, Jason Bourne, scene out of that, you know?
So, okay, let's go back to that. You keep saying you have a lot, everybody's an MMA fighter. Now, I do watch MMA occasionally. I'm not saying I'm a constant viewer. Should I recognize these people, and how did you get them?
Some you might. Like Chris Fields, Cathal Pendred, Cathal and Chris were former UFC fighters. John Redmond would be a Bellator fighter. And Dave Alexander, he was one of the main coaches with Straight Blast Gym here in Ireland. He would have started with John Kavanagh. I was an MMA fighter way back when, you know, when I was a young lad. So this is how I had access to the fighters, because I knew them. And I knew them through Dave, and I knew them through John. So I would reach out and say, look, we need guys that can do fight scenes. Is anyone interested? And Cathal and Chris were just finishing up their MMA runs with their careers and wanted to kind of get into acting a little bit, and they kind of volunteered to do it, you know, which was really nice because we got some nice stuff with them, you know.
I do. I guess we should touch on why hitman drama. You do reference Hard Boiled at one point, which is not hitman drama.
I do like Hard Boiled. It's a fantastic film. We reference a lot of pictures. We reference, I mean, there's a million and one different references in film, but I'm a huge film fan, first and foremost. So, I mean, some of my favorite films of the last 15 years have been the Tartan Asia extreme movies, which would be like, you know, Hard Boiled, Infernal Affairs, just tons and tons of films like so. And I just find an awful lot of people who will tell you they want to act or they want to be a filmmaker don't watch anything outside the sphere of Netflix nowadays. And there's nothing wrong with Netflix, but, you know, you need to really watch some. You're missing out on some great, great films. And I think there's a conversation we have where I'm discussing the subtitle genre with the other hitman, and I said to him, you liked Hard Boiled, and you liked Rashomon, and he says, well, that's not how I remember it, you know. It's a big movie joke, and, you know, it's two types of people who watch the films. That's the people who get the Rashomon joke and the people who get it.
I got the Rashomon joke. I've seen the film. So unless you've seen Rashomon, you won't get the joke. If you've seen Rashomon, it totally makes it. It's a good joke if you get it.
It is a pretty good joke.
I do want to discuss some of the dialogue of the film. I'm not going to bring it up. I found it a little racy at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't offended by it. So I'm just going to ask you, as you go and get to screenings, do people get offended by the dialogue?
Yeah, some people get really offended by the dialogue. But I find that there's three types of people that give me an opinion about this. There's the type that are offended so easily by it, which means they haven't actually listened to the dialogue properly. There's the type that really like it because they think, oh, I can relate to talking like this, but then they also haven't listened to what we've said. And then there's the people who have listened to what the two hitmen have said, and have said, it's really kind of intelligent, because we discuss, like, the N-word, for instance. When we say it, people kind of get shocked by it, and they're like, oh my God, they just said that. But then the conversation is actually about where it came from, how it originated. And what I try and tell people when they say it to me, when I screened it in London, it was part of the Portobello Film Festival. And we had a huge contingent of the audience who were black from London. And when they came to me afterwards, they were like, man, we really, really enjoyed that scene. But when an American person watches it, they say to me, oh my God, I can't believe you said that word. And I'm like, well, you know, we're Irish. Do you know the history of Ireland? Do you understand how, you know, how oppressed Ireland was for 800 or 900 years, and we wouldn't be in the same kind of mindset as they were, say, in America. So when two Irish guys are discussing this word, it's because we don't really discuss this word in Ireland that much. So when it comes up, it's like, well, where did that word come from? Who came up with it? It's a Spanish word. You know, and it was brought up by slave traders, you know. But that's the whole point of using it, was to come up with this conversation. Where did this word come from? Where's the origins of it? And it's the same when we talk about religion, that the two hitmen are saying, well, we don't discriminate against religion. You know, we're just hired to shoot anybody, so we don't have any kind of discrimination against any kind of religion. One of the censors here said he didn't like the fact that we used the word Muslim. And I said, well, the hitman is actually saying how much he likes Muslim people, you know, in the film. He's saying, I really like Muslim people, you know. But because we made a joke about shooting one as a hitman, they were like, oh my God, that's so offensive. But like 2 seconds later, he's saying how much he enjoys meeting Muslim people. We say we want to shoot a Scientologist in the movie and no one says anything. We say, you know, the Kardashians are a cult and nobody says anything. We say our hitman says, I don't like Al Pacino, and nobody says anything. So, yeah. I don't know. So it was just, it's kind of like just pushing the buttons and just saying, look, I mean, these are discussions that have to happen, and they're not off limits, you know?
I'm totally good with it. I just want to know how your crowd reaction was. I'm fine with it, but I don't really care. I base the film as in what world it's set in. That's what you want to present. I accept that. I don't get offended by it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's a world where criminals exist. And I mean, Ireland is very much like that at the moment, where gangland is rampant and it's being kind of ignored. There's on average a shooting a week now in Ireland. Because it's a small island, that's a huge number. But this kind of world, I don't think they watch their P's and Q's, you know. And that kind of, you know, if you're living in that kind of world and you're doing that kind of job, you know, I don't think they really care about whether they're being PC or not, you know.
Oh, for sure. I'm totally fine with it. So you've completed your film in 3 days. How long did it take you to edit it, get it ready to go, submit the festivals?
Oh, God. Well, we got it into cinemas last year, so it took me just to get it in after a cinema run and its edits and it's the whole grading, the sound mixing. It took me 3 years to get to the cinema.
Oh, wow. 3 years?
So each day represents the bloody year, yeah. Almost 3 years, almost.
Why did it take so long?
It was just really difficult to find a distributor, to find anyone that was going to pay attention to it. And we were coming into a time in the world, a time at the moment where that kind of, it's kind of a paradigm shift at the moment where these kind of films are being frowned upon, which is okay, you know. But like that, I end up having to self-distribute, and I worked my ass off to get it into cinema chains up and down Ireland, and now I'm working on the video on demand release, which is me typing out the SRT files by hand.
So how was your, did you go to a cinema and not tell people you were going and just slip in to see what their reaction was?
Well, I mean, like, I would have likened to say we were, the film was incredibly busy like that, but we just barely broke even. I got it into, like, I think it was 9 cinemas in Ireland, which is pretty good, you know, considering there's 32 counties in Ireland, and, which is essentially, we had it in the main Irish cities. We gauged the reaction. It gets good feedback, and then it gets very PC feedback, which is perfectly fine too. So it does divide people. But if you like pictures like Man Bites Dog, or kind of End of Watch to an extent, or if you like In the Loop, or TV shows like The Thick of It or The Office, it's definitely right up your street, you know.
Wow, look at you name dropping. I'm impressed, man. Just like, boom, movie knowledge are like crazy. So did you also go, it sounds like you went the festival circuit too. Now, did you do the festival circuit before the release of the theaters, I presume?
We did, yeah. It was hard. It's difficult because as an indie filmmaker, I emailed every single cinema screen, cinema club, movie theater, theater that had a screen, anything that had something resembling a cinema screen, I emailed them at least 3 or 4 times looking for them to show my film. And I submitted it to almost any and all film festivals that I could afford, which in hindsight, I'd have been better just approaching the cinemas and putting all the money into that. But like that, the cinemas won't show the film unless it has some kind of credence behind it or some kind of weight behind it. And I was lucky enough to get it into a whole bunch of festivals, which meant then I could put the laurels on the poster and it makes it look really cool. More importantly, what actually got the film, the cinemas to pick it up, was that I had acted in a bunch of prominent Irish films leading up to this film release, and then I'd booked an acting job on a big Irish television show, which gets a whole lot of viewers here at home. So they were more inclined then to watch my film and say, well, you know, this is something that could do well. So yeah, we will show your film. So I had to get it certified and I had to get more stuff done with it. And, you know, thankfully they showed it in the cinemas. I could have got it into more, I just couldn't afford it, you know.
It's all good. Sounds like you did well, though. That's great.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, it was nice to see, just to say you had your own film on a big screen. You know, it's really strange that you walk in, you sit down with your popcorn, and your movie comes on, you know.
I think that's awesome. I would love that, but I don't have a movie, so it won't make any difference in my world. I have no more questions for you. Would you like some fun questions?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, whatever you want, man.
Your favorite film?
Cool Hand Luke.
Wow, going old school.
Oh, absolutely. Cool Hand Luke and A Streetcar Named Desire.
Wow, method actors right there, both of them, bleeds.
But, you know, if you want to get into genre, it's like my favorite horror would be An American Werewolf in London, you know. Action movie, it's definitely one of the big three. Predator, Aliens, or Die Hard, you know?
Oh, Die Hard's got to be number one. I love all those films. I would even put Hard Boiled in that list.
Yeah, you see, then you're getting into foreign language now.
No,
you know?
That's just a fabulous film that nobody ever sees.
I know, right? And the killer, you know, then you have the killer as well, which is, you know.
I'm surprised you have not touched on this interview at all. The Raid Redemption has not come up.
Raid? Oh, yes. Actually,
not once have you mentioned that. You keep talking about Asian films, and then he's never mentioned Raid Redemption. So what do you think of Raid Redemption?
I think the Raid, I think the Raid movies are, what's weird about them is they're made by a Scottish guy, you know.
Yeah.
The director's a Scottish man, you know.
I don't care, they're amazing.
But my God, if you want to watch an action-packed movie for two action-packed movies, Raid 1 and Raid 2, and if you want to follow up with something even really cool, or watch Ong Bak.
Yep.
I just wish that Tony Jaa and the lead actor from the Raid would just get together and make a big movie, you know.
Since you're Irish, I have to ask this question. Your favorite food?
My favorite food? Chicken and potatoes.
See, I knew it. It was him. And I'm going to have to ask that you're Irish too. Your favorite beer?
Favorite beer? I'm a whiskey drinker.
Fine. Favorite whiskey?
Well, I drink bourbon, so I drink Jack Daniels. But, you know, I can have a Jameson from time to time as well, you know.
Have you ever been to the Guinness factory?
I used to work there.
Okay. What did you do at the Guinness factory?
I used to meet the tours when they would come in to do a tour around. I would work in the gift shop and I would try and entice them in and sell them a t-shirt or something like that, you know.
Well, tell everybody where you can find Split, and that's it. That's all I got left.
Well, at the moment, I'm just working. It's going to be on video on demand soon, so you will get it on like iTunes, Google Play, the usual Amazon, stuff like that. So it'll be available in the next few weeks right there, you know. And you'll be one of the first to know, Simon.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, thank you for your time. You were awesome.
No problem. I really appreciate you taking the time to give me a call here.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too, sir. And best of luck at the recital.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you now. Bye-bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.